Welcome to the Ninja Lane podcast. In this episode, we talk about the new GTX Titan from NVIDIA. Darren waxes poetic about free-to-play games like Planet Side 2 and Path of Exile. And we have a special interview with Nathan Allman from Cooler Master. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. And with me today, I have Darren McCain. In the previous episode, we were talking about how Darren was planning for his trip, and he's been off the grid for a couple of weeks now. And,
yeah, that's true.
And I believe you're back in the States, obviously, because you're sitting right across from me.
I am, although I had a little bout with some family sickness, too, that was unexpected. Whether that was related to the trip or not, it's difficult to say.
Well, as they say, you kind of have a little yin-yang going, so you have fun for a week, and then you come back, and then you're miserable.
Isn't that the truth? It is hard to adjust from coming back.
So I believe you were south of the border, right?
I was. I was in Cabo San Lucas for just under a week.
And how was that? Tell me.
Beautiful. Just gorgeous whales running right off the hotel room window. I mean, just hard to come back.
So since you were off the grid, you kind of missed out on some interesting tech news.
You know, it has been a busy week from what I hear, but the highlight is what? A new video card?
Yeah, the NVIDIA GTX Titan.
Titan. Now, in my world, Titan is kind of one of those peak things.
Well, they use Titan in a lot of games. That's always like the, what was it, Age of Empires? You had the Titan edition where you could go and summon this big rock monster and kill everybody.
Indeed. And Titan kind of brings to mind the, you know, the battle of the gods versus the mortals and the whole, you know, there's just power there.
Well, in this case, there is some power. The name came from the supercomputer that was built at Oak Ridge National Laboratories that NVIDIA helped fund by selling them a bunch of Tesla cars.
So now, let me get this straight. Those were GPUs, right?
Yeah, a Tesla card is a compute card. So it is like a video card, but it doesn't have the video out. So you can write the software to go and use the streaming multiprocessors in the GPU, or in this case, the Tesla card, to do massive amounts of calculations.
Now, you know, I'm a bit of an ATI guy, but I've heard that the Titan isn't even based on the most current architecture, that it's actually an older product. Is that true?
No, it's a brand new product, although I believe it was announced before the GTX 680 was.
Maybe that's what I'm hearing. So where does it stack up? What's its pedigree?
Well, it's using the same Kepler architecture that you find in the GTX 680, 670, 660.
Okay.
So you have the streaming multiprocessor model, which is really, really efficient, both in power and in power, you know, actual power going into the card.
Hence the Titan.
Titan, yes.
More now, power.
The GK110 GPU is based off of the 680, as I mentioned. It just has a lot more stuff in it. For instance, you have 5 processing clusters, which is 14 streaming multiprocessors for a total of 2,688 cores or CUDA cores.
And those are the CUDA cores. So how does that stack up with like 680?
That's about twice as many.
Oh, well, that's impressive.
Yeah, so it's kind of like having two of those cards all smashed together in one GPU. Now, initially, NVIDIA had created this GPU for the supercomputing market for Tesla cars, and that was really where it was designed to be used. But if you look back at the way NVIDIA has created these cards before, they would always release the consumer edition card.
Right.
And then create a compute variant off of that. So that you would just remove the video out and then you'd have the same core GPU there.
So looking at the 680 or 690, if you have a big pocketbook, is the Titan the next step up, the next generation?
It fits in that lineup a little differently. This GTX 690 is a dual GPU card. It's based off of some downclocked versions of the GTX 680, which is also the current reigning champion of the retail market. Now, with the Titan, that's a single GPU that has about the same performance as a GTX 690.
So Titan doesn't have a number, though, right?
It doesn't have a number because it's based off of the, you know, the Tesla card is the K20, I believe. They have a couple of variants of that. Since it's based off of that, they can use whatever naming sequence they want because it doesn't really fit into the lineup. Or at least the quote-unquote current lineup.
Well, that beats some of the crazy things they've done with numbering and naming conventions in the past.
Well, that's true. And it's kind of a one-off card, which makes it a bit special. Kind of like the GTX 690. That was a dual GPU card that NVIDIA, they controlled everything about it. They manufactured the boards, they manufactured the coolers, and they just licensed that card to be sold by different various manufacturers. Like in the United States, EVGA and ASUS are the primary suppliers of this card. With the GTX Titan, it's the same thing. EVGA and ASUS are the primary suppliers. NVIDIA, they build the PCB with the GPU on it. They also build the cooler, which is, it's kind of a fancy thing. It's all titanium with a little window in it. It's pretty
nice.
Cool. But they control every aspect of that card and then send it out to the manufacturers to sell.
So does this make the Titan a lot like some of these special edition cards that show up only for a really brief window for enthusiasts and then vanish into the dust?
I want to say yes, but, you know, if you go out and to like EVGA's website, they have three versions of the Titan that they're selling readily.
Oh, that's a good sign.
Then again, it also is a $1,000 price tag, so
ooh,
they might not be selling too many of them, even though they have a bunch on the shelves.
So does the Titan do the same things we'd expect from other high-end NVIDIA cards, the SLI and all that good stuff?
Yes, it comes with two SLI fingers on there. NVIDIA, during their press release conference thing, they were talking about three-way SLI with the GTX Titan.
Ooh, deep pocketbooks.
Yes. Well, that's, you know, $3,000 worth of GPU power. They were comparing it against the GTX 690, which is a dual GPU card, and you can run that in two-way SLI for four GPUs. So that's technically quad SLI or four-way SLI. It's semantics at that point.
Right.
Well, Kingpin from EVGA was overclocking four Titans under liquid nitrogen and four-way SLI. So obviously the drivers support four-way, even though NVIDIA was only claiming the three-way option.
So I would expect from hearing something like that, that the Titan must be tearing up the overclocking charts.
Yes, it is. Now, part of the reason that it's tearing that up is because of the amount of processing power that the card has, but also the fact that it has this GPU Boost 2.0 technology, where the clock speed is directly related to a power target that you're trying to attain.
That sounds a lot like the turbo mode that they've put out for processors for power saving.
Yeah, it's very similar. It will just ramp the clock frequency based on the power target and power consumption, which is kind of a temperature thing.
So it is based on the usage then?
Yes, when you are 3D gaming, if you can keep your system relatively cool, it will provide you with more power.
Oh, I see. So it is temperature based. Okay. How does the rest of the architecture compare to the 600 series that's already out?
The GTX Titan comes with 6 gigs of memory and a 384-bit memory bus. So it's going to have a lot more frame buffer memory than, you know, any of the high-end 680s right now. And that will help with the gameplay, but it's mostly for future-proofing because not many games are going to use more than what the 680 has.
So based on the huge price point and the fact that the architecture is a little bit different, would you recommend the Titan? I'm having trouble coming up with the target audience here. To me, it sounds like the 680 is still the way to go for gaming.
You're kind of torn. You have the 680, which if you get a overclocked edition of it, you're going to be putting down about $700. For $200 more, you can get a GTX Titan, and you know, for $1,050, you can get an EVGA edition that is superclocked and also water-cooled. So there's a definite benefit for going to the Titan, but if you're on a budget, you know, you could go with a GTX 670 and get two of those, run them in SLI, and be able to play any game out there. And then when you go to upgrade your system, you just replace it with whatever the current GPU is.
So not unlike the 690, the Titan kind of really is the top dog for the sake of being the top dog.
Right. Now, in terms of top dog in the retail space, it's also currently the top dog at HardwareBot. I already mentioned that Kingpin had taken four of these in SLI and was smashing records left and right.
So budget's not an option. It sounds like the Titan's your man, but if you were looking for a budget, you can get probably all the performance you need, it sounds like, from a little bit lower SLI setup.
Definitely.
Well, we'll see what the Titan brings us in the future. I'm curious to see if that architecture continues.
It's no secret that hardware has been a little slow lately. I mean, we're kind of between product launches. Normally, we have a new processor at CES, but Intel kind of moved it to the June timeframe, and that will be for Haswell. The lull has allowed me to take on some side projects, some super secret ones, and I believe Darren has picked up a few new games aside from the Borderlands stuff that we've done.
I have. Well, you know, I enjoy Borderlands, but I've beaten it to the wall and back again a little bit.
Yeah, I have two characters at level 50 now, and it's all about farming at that point. And it kind of gets old pretty quick.
Well, you know, I'm not a huge fan of farming, and I do love Borderlands. So I've been kind of filling my time, bringing up my third, fourth, and fifth character to level 50, using, you know, some farming and some of the add-on content. Because the new DLC is not out yet.
Yeah, that's true. It should be out really soon. They're going to introduce a new character, and I'm still not sure what the fourth DLC is going to be like, though.
Well, that'll be interesting, but the hardware level cap issue is kind of where they lose me. So it'll be interesting to see if there really is a level cap increase. But in the meantime, with the 50 cap and the game beat, it's kind of gone a little stale.
Yeah, and I believe that is one thing that is keeping the DLC from coming out, is that, you know, they look at the how many people are using the shift codes and what level you're at, and they're making that determination to release the new DLC.
Well, that's fair, because it sort of throttles it. But in the meantime, I've kind of started looking at some of the other dusty titles in my collection.
Well, and that collection is extensive. I don't even know how many you have. But I've seen you playing PlanetSide and Path of Exile a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So PlanetSide 2 was out, and I don't know if we've talked about in the past that I used to play a lot of the original PlanetSide, and it's no secret that I'm not a big fan of pay-to-play game, so that might be a bit of a surprise to some of our listeners. But way back in the day, I guess it's been almost 6 years now, I got really into PlanetSide, which is a massive online first-person shooter. Sort of a clan-based game, so if you haven't tried PlanetSide, it's still out there, but it still costs you to pay. But PlanetSide 2 has come out on a free-to-play model with premium content, or a pay-as-you-go, pay-to-play sort of model.
So it's kind of like a Facebook game where you can play to a certain extent and then you need to buy something?
Yes and no. So to be fair, PlanetSide is a persistent, massive online first-person shooter. There are three clans that are in a pretty constant war over several planets. So what you do is you choose a faction and you choose a server. And just for full disclosure, I play on a European server because it is always the busiest server when I seem to be online. So I don't even play on a US server. But you join these planets and you join your faction. I play as Vanu, just out of habit. They're an energy weapon and hover vehicle-based society. And they're the perennial underdogs. They always seem to have the lowest population. So to me, the appeal was, I can make a little bit more of a difference. But long story short, you build up your character using sort of an MMORPG scaling system in that you gain experience. You use those points to buy upgraded equipment packages or advantages for your character. So, to give you an idea of what's really cool about it, the worlds are ginormous, like bigger than any game I've ever played. And you can have maybe thousands of people, counting the three factions, on the server at the same time, and in a beautiful synergy moment, all maybe in the same place.
Wow. So, with the maps being so large, are they continuously loading at that point, or is it one of those things where it takes up a lot of memory?
You know, it's funny you say that, because it isn't really continuously loading, and I've had very little lag in the game, even when I'm in areas that may have, you know, hundreds of players. The draw distance seems to fluctuate a little bit, and that seems to be how they take care of that. Now, that does tend to make it so snipers can be a little frustrating.
Yeah.
But the good news is that if you have good technology or you've upgraded your sights, they show up a little better, and they have you know, some of the things you see in multiplayer online games. So if you shoot, you appear on the map. So they do alleviate that sort of stuff. Although, like all those games, there are advantages you can get that cover it. So the game itself, massive. But the downside is there's a phenomenally steep learning curve, even for players like me that have months of service in the original PlanetSide. You really start out with nothing, and you're extremely vulnerable, and you're dropped into, like I say, it could be hundreds of people battling with really not much of a clue as to what the heck to do. In fact, you probably don't even have the ability to capture territory when you initially start. So even if you could find a capture station, you can't take it.
Wow.
So it can be very punishing. There are some great videos on it out there, but this is where the frustration for pay-to-play comes in for me. I probably am not even very high. I think I'm level 9, but that's probably 12 or 16 hours of play, somewhere right in that range. And I have used my experience points. I do not even have enough for the next weapon package. And by contrast, I'm regularly killed by players that's levels are lower than mine with weapons that they could only have gotten through purchase. So Sony is kind of famous for this, although they did give the game away. You have to buy station credits, convert those over into planet side credits, and then purchase equipment. And there's always something cool on sale. And the advanced equipment is awesome and amazing and vastly overpowers anything that you get at the start of the game. It's maddeningly frustrating. I mean, it really is one of those cases where if you don't pay and you don't put in an extraordinary amount of time to specialize your character in a very specific niche, you cannot win without paying.
Wow. That sounds frustrating, actually.
So, by contrast, you mentioned Path of Exile, and I really like Path of Exile, and it's in open beta.
Yeah, I did download that game, and it reminds me a lot of Diablo, where it's a top-down sort of third person.
And that's not by accident. In fact, I would say that that is one of its biggest strengths. Path of Exile is a top-down or isometric view shooter. Now, what makes Path of Exile really so exciting is the amount of customization that goes into it. Now, it is, or at least it will be, it's in beta, be a pay-to-play model in a sense that you can purchase, you know, credits up front, better equipment, level boosts, blah, blah, blah. But so far, and again, it's in beta, that's the big disclaimer, I haven't seen where not paying is a derogatory or a negative. So Path of Exile allows you to play solo in groups. It's instanced play, which is something I really like back from Guild Wars, the other online game that I spent some time in, which has a really great model. We talk about it another time. But in short, what that means is when you enter an area, you're in there by yourself or with other people from your group or party. That particular instance persists only for those people. And it survives for a certain amount of time before it repopulates.
Right. And it also has the fog of war. So once you leave the area and come back, it can change.
Yeah. And maybe what is most cool about that is you can clear an area, leave, and then tell it you want it to respawn the area instead of waiting for the timer. So if you're a little weak or you want to farm an area, you can. The other nice advantage of it is, like Diablo, you have town portal spells where you can go back and dump your gear. Different areas have levels to them, so when you go into an area, you immediately know what level the monsters are and how that compares to your character and kind of gives you an idea if you need to do any training, as we say.
Right. Now, you see, when I was playing it, I got to the point where I could get my character to move around. I kind of figured out what the commands were, but the help system wasn't very, I should say, helpful.
Yeah.
So it was really difficult for me to, at first, you know, I started as a witch.
Oh,
so,
okay.
You know, you get to cast spells and stuff. And my first attack was a melee attack because I didn't really know how to cast a spell.
Right.
Then I figured out how to cast a spell so I could do ranged attacks. You know, I think I got maybe 10 kills and some stuff off of the bodies. And then I couldn't figure out how to get anything out of my inventory to see what I had.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, like I mentioned, the help model was a little difficult. There was a kind of a steep learning curve. And I'm sure there was a how-to somewhere that I needed to read. But it wasn't really my type of game. It seemed really slow-paced, whereas I come from a first-person shooter background where I want to have something fast moving around and being able to do stuff. Like Skyrim is probably right on the cusp of not being fast enough.
Well, what I like about Path of Exile, I think, is that you have some control over the pacing. Mm-hmm. Because you can move as fast or as slow through the areas as you're able. And it's not difficult to push into more mobs than you can handle. Especially initially because, like the Diablo-style games, you get some really pretty crappy equipment up front. And one of the things that speeds up the play and really gives it some unique ability is the skill tree. When you build a character, you start out with one of the original characters, and they're pretty archetypical. I think there are 6 to choose from. But the skill tree really needs to be seen to believed, and we'll link to it in the show notes because it is maybe the most... it's hard to describe how just massive it is, and it really makes a very big difference how you spend your points.
I looked at the skill tree, and I want to say it reminded me of one of those maps that you see in school where you're mapping the internet, so you can see... Here you are, and then you have 5 nodes out, and off of that, you have 10 nodes off one, 3 nodes off another. Mm-hmm. So you invest into one skill point, and then you have 5 to choose from, and then you can pick one there, and it just keeps going as a little spider web.
So one thing I will warn you when you play Path of Exile is choose your points very wisely. They have a skill tree online that you can use to plot out your character, because you're only allowed to take back the last 1 or 2 points that you've spent. So you don't get to say, oh, this sucks, let me totally respec. At least I haven't found a way to do that.
Right. Unlike in Borderlands where 16,000 and you can go and respec your character.
Yeah, totally respec and try different playstyles. So it really encourages you to build different characters, which is kind of cool. But the skill tree, very amazing. I like to play the hunter style, and I've been working on an archer. I like the ranged combat, the sniper combat, and those style of games. So I've really been kind of experimenting with how do I get the most bow damage and stay back and lay traps. I mean, the skill tree itself is amazing. The game is free, and you can play in instances with your friends. At the moment, at least, I would encourage you that no need to pay is required. So definitely two different ways of looking at pay to play. You got PlanetSide 2 where, yes, you can play and put in the time, and yeah, if you're a little bit narcissistic, you can probably compete with the folks that pay, but wow, it's maddening. But the game itself is probably worth a look, at least so you can see these massive persistent battles, because there's nothing like it. Path of Exile allows you to choose your style of play a little more intimate or in a group setting with the instance play, and control your pace a little further. And if you like the Diablo-style game, I can tell you that this is everything I thought Diablo 3 should have been. It's got a great storyline, massive replayability, amazing character customization, and that same massive loot drive that I find very appealing. But if you don't pay, you just play it a little bit slower.
Well, maybe with the when it gets out of beta, that's going to change slightly.
Yeah, they've got to make some money somewhere. Everybody knows that. So anyway, two really great games that you can try for free. Two very different styles. And who knows, one of them might get you hooked.
In this episode, we have another special interview, this time with Nathan Allman from Cooler Master. Hope you enjoy. Hello, Nate. Welcome to the Ninja Lane podcast. Can you please introduce yourself?
I am a markup for the desktop component team, which includes chassis, coolers, power supplies, and fans. I've been with Cooler Master for about 6 months.
So how long have you worked in the hardware industry?
I've been in the industry for about 5 years. I worked at a motherboard manufacturer for 3 years. Well, a little over 3 years before coming to Cooler Master. I was in the tech support department, and then I moved over to sales.
How is working for a motherboard company different than, say, Cooler Master?
Oh, that's interesting. no, I like that. I mean, there are a lot of similarities. The companies are kind of run the same just because it's a Taiwanese company, and that's how they do things a certain way. As long as you're used to the culture, you're used to what's going to happen and the understanding of it. Going from the motherboard company to Cooler Master is much, much larger, so there's a lot more, you know, gears turning and stuff. So
yeah, I visited the Taiwan office a couple times, and there's a lot going on there, that's for sure. I understand have a little personal experience with podcasting. What can you tell me about your experiences, and how did you get started?
I got started because a friend started doing podcasting about 8 years ago, and it was basically an excuse for us to get together and chat and hang out with each other. And, you know, we just do it every weekend or every other weekend, or when somebody was going to leave town, like if they're moving out of state or they're going back to school, we just get together and have like a going away party or a going away podcast.
Right. So what kind of things did you talk about? Just things in general, or was it kind of passionate about like cars or something like that?
No, because we're all kind of, you know, when you get 6 different people or so together or 5 different people, they're not always going to have that many things that overlap. So you end up talking about, you know, what you guys have been up to or what are you going to do or your jobs and stuff like that. Mostly, Yeah, and when we listen back to it, it sounds like we're just talking about stuff to update other people. Like if somebody's out of town, you could listen back to it and figure out what your friends are doing, just because it was a group of friends just doing it.
It's quite a bit different than a tech podcast, that's for sure. Well, the reason I asked for you to be on the show was to hear more about what Cooler Master has planned for 2013. One of the highlights from CES was the display of the reemergence of the aluminum chassis, which Cooler Master helped pioneer. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, the ATCS 710. We displayed the silver version of that, or the natural aluminum version of that there. And we're still kind of working on fine-tuning the price-spec combination, while still trying to stay true to the outlook. I believe it'll still look the same as the one you saw there. There'll just be minor tweaks. It'll probably come out Q4 or Q1 of next year, just because, you know, it takes a while to make changes. Right. Any kind of change could be a big change. But yeah, we're excited about it. It's a good looking case. It's very reminiscent of the previous versions. I was a big fan of the 840. It was a little bigger, a little more boxy, but the new ATCS has a focus on quiet, kind of becoming an emerging thing among chassis, and water cooling. So we just want to make sure that you can get as much stuff in there as possible while still looking like the ATCS.
Right. That was a classy design. And I want to say the European market is really driving silent PCs. You know, here in the US, we don't really care too much about that just quite yet. So
when you do something for Europe, they get a little picky if the fans are too loud or something isn't right.
These days, you can get a chassis in just about any configuration imaginable. What can you say is the most extreme chassis you've seen at Cooler Master so far?
The most extreme current one, I think, is the Half XB. In terms of looks and body style, it's different. It still looks like a half case, if you're familiar with the half line, but just the box size and dimensionally, it's different. So I think that's the most different one we have now.
Yeah, it's in the configuration of a test bench that's just kind of encased, which is kind of nice. Oh, so what do you think of the Cosmos 2? Isn't that kind of an extreme case as well?
Yeah, Cosmos 2 is just the biggest everything you can throw at it kind of case. There's a ton of hard drives, you know, power, any size power supply, all that stuff, any size board. It's just one of those unbelievable UFO space futuristic looking chassis that either people love it or they hate it.
Yeah. Well, the important thing to note is also that the Half XB is something that just about anybody could buy, whereas the Cosmos 2s is, it's kind of a special person that's going to want that.
Yeah, you could get either three Half XBs or one Cosmos. There's a market out there for the extreme high-end cases, and Cosmos fills that.
So what are your thoughts on air cooling?
I'm personally a fan, and I recommend it for people who aren't enthusiast level, you know, like my parents or friends who don't want to worry about something leaking in their case from a water cooling standpoint. And I think there will always be air cooling, and I think there's still room for technological advances like the TPC 812 and 612 with the vertical vapor chamber, which originated from, you know, video cards. So I think there's still, you know, room for improvement there, and it's going to continue going. But there's a definite shift in the way the market and the channel is moving right now towards water cooling.
You mentioned the TPC 812 and 612. What other coolers are going to be coming out in 2013?
We displayed the V8, which also has a vapor chamber. It has a horizontal vapor chamber. We displayed that at CES. That's like, you know, the high-end auto-looking one. And we're going to have a replacement for the Hyper 212 Plus. We already have the Evo version, but as a direct replacement, we're going to swap in one called the Hyper T4, which is a little smaller, but same level of performance and same, you know, ultra-competitive pricing.
So do you think custom tower coolers are kind of on a decline with enthusiasts, or do you see another product kind of taking over?
Yeah, I think it's all price point motivated.
Right. Well, as an enthusiast, I'm always looking for the best performance, and water cooling can give me that. And I prefer to build my own as a DIY sort of solution instead of the all-in-one coolers, which are really kind of becoming popular now. So what kind of products does Cooler Master have to kind of fill the niche in between the all-in-one and, you know, the DIY enthusiast like myself?
We have the Iceberg coming out. It's already available in Europe, and I mean, if you go online, you could see people showing videos of it. It's kind of meeting the middle between all-in-one and DIY, because you can take the fittings off and hook it into the radiator, hook it up to your graphics card, add a reservoir, or you can, you know, if something happened to your current DIY cooling solution, you'd be able to just swap in a pump, because we're going to sell that separately. But it's not really going to be for wide release. It's mostly going to be available at like Frozen CPU and our own CM store.
Great. So for people that are looking for a more mainstream solution, I believe the Siden is going to have several different versions. And Darren and I have looked at that on a previous podcast. So what different product lines are we going to have for that?
Yeah, the Siden, there are three sizes, the 120M, the 120XL, and the 240M. The 120XL and the 240 just launched. I mean, unique features about that would be, like you already mentioned, it's all-in-one, it's low maintenance, the hoses are pretty cool, you can bend them in different directions, they won't kink. It's pretty easy to put together, we have a bunch of videos online with how-tos, and it's actually all made by us. Like, it's designed by Cooler Master, manufactured by Cooler Master, it's not a rebranded Azatec or Cooler part.
Oh, and that's an important thing to note, is that it is a Cooler Master product, soup to nuts.
We released the original all-in-one years ago, and you know we kind of got out of the market, and then the market itself came back, and we just wanted to make sure we came prepared and ready to do battle, and I think that the Siden is going to be able to do that.
Right. Yeah, I still have one of the original Akko gates in my closet somewhere. There was two versions of that. There was one with a divorced radiator and pump assembly, and then there was one that was kind of all-in-one where the pump was on the CPU block. It was, you know, years ahead of its time.
Yeah, it was a cool little product. It was a lot bulkier than the pumps we have now. I think the Siden is, you know, less than an inch thick or something. It's just a small, thin little product doodle.
So I understand Cooler Master has an extensive line of power supplies, and that's one thing that system builders often forget to upgrade when they're kind of speccing out a system. It's everything's on getting the best processor and the right motherboard and the proper amount of memory and slapping in a new GTX Titan. You know, it's all about performance, but people often forget that the power supply is the heart of this whole system, bringing it all together. So what does Cooler Master have for 2013 for the enthusiast?
Yeah, for the enthusiast, we're going to have the V series, which is going to be 700, 850, and 1,000. It's going to be made by Seasonic. That's going to be something we announce later with like a PR, but we're having some of our high-end PSUs made by Seasonic. It's going to have a big 135mm fan, hydraulic bearing, what else? Flat cables, 80 plus gold. It's going to be really high end, nice power supply, and it's going to look good.
Yeah, and this one's going to be fully modular, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And it has kind of a unique, I think it's 16 and 8 pin connector for the CPU power. So it's dedicated lines instead of duplicated lines. And it's all single rail, 12 volt, so it'll be good. People are going to like it. We're hoping that it picks up.
Great. So what other models are available for people that aren't looking for the upper crust and the power supply?
Yeah, if you aren't looking to spend a couple $100, we're going to have the I-Series available, and that'll be 500, 600, and 700, and the pricing is going to be about 50, 60, 70 for those three models.
Right. Now, I know these are kind of a pre-release sort of thing, but do you know if they're going to have the flat cables or is it going to be a braided round cable?
The V-Series are going to have the flat cables. We'll probably come out with something either later in the year or next year that has more of the braided cables.
So some of the other stuff that was being shown at CES was in the Storm Room, and I believe we have a couple of mechanical keyboards there with some funky weird keys, and we had a lot of case mods. So what can you tell us about that stuff?
Yeah, the keyboards, we have the Quickfire Stealth coming out, and that is the one that has... It's going to be releasing really soon. It has all black on top, and the printing is on the front. So the oils from your fingers, or there won't be any kind of wear and tear visible because it's just flat black on the tops. Right. That's really cool. That's one of those keyboards where when you look at it head on, you can't. It just looks like black, and then somebody tilts it to you, and it's kind of like, whoa, look at the freaking old stuff.
Yeah, I was taken back when I first saw that keyboard. I thought it was broken, and then that was pointed out that there were small little letters on the side, you know, facing you as you're facing the front of the keyboard. And for the hunt and peck typist, that might be a little tough, but you know, if you're a touch typist, I think that will work out pretty well.
Yeah, the only time I need to look at the keys is when I'm trying to find the ampersand or the caret or something like that, and I'm just not sure which button it's at. We also have the Quickfire XT coming out, which is, or maybe it's the Quickfire Rapid XT. Yeah, so we have the Quickfire Rapid XT coming out, and it's the Rapid is our most popular keyboard. It's the one that has no 10 key. Mm-hmm. So it just says the QWERTY and the command.
And the XT is going to be a full-size keyboard, but it's going to be really thin. It's going to be the thinnest Cherry keyboard available. And, you know, it's just more for the professional typist. I mean, I'm sure gamers are going to want it, but that's a much more professional, clean outlook with no logos except for the one on the top that you can't see, you know, on the backside.
Right. Yeah, the gamers are really after the small, compact keyboard that will fit in a bag so they can take it to a LAN party. You know, somebody that's going to be sitting at their desk all day just typing away, they're going to want as many keys as possible, that's for sure.
Yeah, we think the Stealth is going to be a real big hit. And all those keyboards are going to be available in all the Cherry MX, red, black, green, and blue. I don't think we're doing black as much anymore. Maybe we've dropped it all together. I think we might have swapped out black for green because we have the exclusive rights to green in the U.S., so nobody else is going to come out with a green Cherry keyboard.
Now, that's going to be available on all the keyboard lines. You're going to have all the Cherry Switch options, right?
Storm's really pushing for a variety, you know, choose your own Switch type of mantra where, like, hey, okay, if you like red, we have red keyboards. If you like black, great. If you like blue, if you like green, if you like brown, whatever you want, we are going to have a keyboard for you. If you like the TK, if you like the 10 key, if you like the 10 key less, if you like the full-size keyboard, we're going to have as many options available so that there isn't somebody who can say, oh, I don't like Cooler Master keyboards because they don't have the one I like. They don't have one for me. We want to make it available for everybody, gamer, professional, whatever.
So on the lighter side, I know Cooler Master doesn't mod cases per se, except for the manufactured ones. But at the CES booth, you had quite a few, I believe, user-submitted mods on display, right?
Yeah, we had 5 mods at least. We had 3 half XBs in the Storm Room. One was a blue and white one made by Lee Harrington from PC Junkie Mods. Then there was the green NVIDIA one made by Brian White, which was on the cover of CPU Magazine this month, March.
Yeah, that was a really nice mod. I really like that one.
Yeah, that was incredible. Like him and Lee both put a lot of time and money into that. And the third one was by Ron Lee Christensen. He's the guy who does that Biohazard mod. And he's also the guy who did the Ducati mod, which got a lot of attention. There's a Ducati Scout mod at the front. It was just unbelievable. We had somebody would grab their attention right when he came through the door, but as they circled back to leave, you'd always see the exhaust pipe on the Ducati mod. It was really cool. And then next to that was another one of Lee's mods. Lee Harrington did the chrome tubed one with the skull on the side. It looked awesome.
I'm always jealous of modders that are able to do hard mods like that. You know, being able to run a hard copper pipe to connect their water cooling system together. It's like, I have a hard enough time getting, you know, a vinyl hose to lay down nicely when I'm doing a water cooling setup. And being able to do that with like a copper pipe and also have it chromed in this case, you know, that's just impressive.
Yeah, it's like he had to cut it right, bend it right, and then send it off to somebody else to get it chromed, get it back, and then install it, and then hope that nothing changed or, you know, a video card doesn't fail or, you know, there isn't some kind of corrosion inside there going on that you can't see. It just, I don't know, it's crazy. It was just a really, really impressive mod.
Those mods are really designed to be looked at, not necessarily to be used, so I can kind of understand where they're coming from, but yeah, you don't want to change a video card in those things because you'll be redoing the entire setup.
He spent a lot of time on that. I think it took 3 to 4 months for that mod to be completed. I mean, he was doing several concurrently, and obviously he's got a day job and everything, but just there's a lot of time and money and effort put into all those mods, and we really appreciate them doing that for us.
Okay. So I wanted to thank you for talking with me on the podcast today. This has been a great overview of some of the products that will be coming out in 2013. So if somebody wanted to learn more about these products, how would they get a hold of you?
If you're interested in Storm products, you can go to cmstorm.com. If you want to get in contact with us, go to our Cooler Master Americas page on Facebook, our coolermaster-usa.com site for pretty much everything Cooler Master.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes. If you have questions, drop by the forums or email us at podcast@ninjalane.com. Stay up to date on the latest at NinjaLink by subscribing to our RSS, now available on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, or join us on Facebook. This has been a NinjaLink production, copyright 2013. Thanks for listening.